This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A sit-in demonstration at Duke University is entering its seventh day. A small group of student protesters occupied the Allen Administration Building to bring attention to the treatment of minimum wage employees. It's a response to an incident that happened nearly 2 years ago in which a white administrator hit a black parking attendant with his car. The attendant, Shelvia Underwood, alleges Executive Vice President Talman Trask then used a racial slur. That incident is the subject of a lawsuit. Meanwhile, protesters say the alleged incident illustrates a discriminatory environment at Duke. The university is engaging in a conversation with students about their demands, which include the resignation of Talman Trask and a living wage for Duke employees. Andy Thomason has been following the story. He's an editor with the Chronicle of Higher Education and joins me now on the State of Things. Welcome, Andy.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Let's go back to almost 2 years ago to the initial incident between Shelvia Underwood and Talman Trask. What do we know about what happened?
Well, it's tricky because it's all the subject of a pending lawsuit, but essentially it's alleged that Talman Trask, the executive vice president, hit this parking attendant with his Porsche and abruptly, and then they had a conversation in which the parking attendant says he used a racial slur before driving away. Now, a little bit after that, in a handwritten note he sent her, he apologized, but he's never admitted to using this racial slur, and this was all just aired recently in a lawsuit that was reported on by the Duke Chronicle, the campus's newspaper.
Yeah, and it's interesting, in that initial report in the campus newspaper, the Chronicle, Talman Trask denied everything until the reporter showed him his apology. And then he said, well, I guess the incident happened, but the racial slur I deny. Am I right about that?
You're right about that, according to the Chronicle. And then just this week, Mr. Trask came out and wrote an apology to the entire campus community where he sort of addressed his own civility, but the language was somewhat vague, though apologetic.
And the incident itself happened after an altercation. The parking attendant is a contract employee, and I guess this is going to be part of the larger story that we're going to get to in a minute. A contract employee working in the parking division and sort of was doing their job, trying to keep people out of places they didn't belong, asking for credentials, and Talman Trask apparently didn't have them. To demonstrate that he had the right to go where he wanted to go, and this was what led to the altercation.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and as you alluded to, that this flap sort of illustrates a lot of the issues surrounding contingent labor that work at universities, and in close corners of these universities, and not just universities like Duke, but also in North Carolina, UNC, the lowest paid workers there. Often engage in social action to lobby for better wages, and they often find students to be sympathetic to those causes.
Yeah, and it should be pointed out that it's taken 2 years for this story to come to light. Shelvia Underwood was not anxious to, or for some reason didn't right away file a lawsuit. So it's been under wraps. The whole story has been under wraps for nearly 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, go ahead.
No, finish that because now students have become aware of it. So let's talk about the reaction on campus once it.
Well,
once
I think adding the racial component to this is. What makes it such an inflammatory story? Anyone who's been paying attention to higher education for the past 6 months knows that this awareness of institutional racism has absolutely caught fire on campuses nationwide and encouraged all sorts of protests. And I think that the element of racism that's involved in this allegation has given it some degree. Of staying power and of something to that students have found it able to rally around.
So tell us what the protesters are asking for.
So the protesters are asking for the resignation of Talman Trask as well as two other administrators. And not only that, but also that Duke's minimum wage for employees be raised to $15. So those are two of the main allegations. They're also asking for that workers be involved with the negotiations surrounding this protest. So those are three of the main demands.
And that minimum wage now stands at $12, so they're asking for a $3 raise.
That's correct.
All right. So what's interesting about this is that Duke is actually engaging in some conversation with these protesters. Tell us about that. And from your perch at the Chronicle of Higher Education, how is this unique in the sense that Duke is actually engaging with these protesters and not just throwing them out of the Allen Building?
Well, it's all part of, you know, it's in keeping with a softer kind of negotiating strategy that university administrations have been using for the past couple of years. It's sort of a let's shy away from being seen as in contest or against the protesters, and instead engaging in conversations with them, deciding where do we have common ground. But you know, it's sort of useful as a strategy because you are being seen to sort of put yourself in the negotiations and as trying to satisfy these demands. What's interesting about the Duke case is that it didn't start out this way. Over the weekend, Duke administrators made it clear that if the protesters stayed in the Allen Building for the full weekend past Sunday, they could be subject to disciplinary action. Now, late on Sunday, they backed away from that and said we can continue negotiations into Monday. But you know, this has kept going; it kept going all week.
They're negotiating, but Duke has already made, to some extent, some concessions, or at least an announcement about its review of its pay policies. Am I right?
That's right. You know, in part, part of the staying power of this protest has, at least in part, been fueled by some administrative retreat. I already mentioned the concession to let them stay past Sunday, but then saying we're not going to negotiate with you guys until you leave the building. Well, you know, let's define negotiation, but in the middle of the week, they said we're going to start the process to raise the minimum wage from the current $12. You know, Duke protesters responded very quickly and saying that's not enough, we're staying.
And you talked about this being part of a trend, and I guess we can see it in a timeline that would go from, let's say, protest at UC Davis in 2011 to Missouri just less than a year ago.
Absolutely. That UC Davis incident was one of the most stark. That was the protesters there as part of the Occupy movement getting pepper sprayed in the face, and we're really not seeing that today.
What about the protest on campus? It is a small group of students who occupy the Allen Building. Does this have much traction, broader traction on the campus and the community at large?
Well, there's been a group that's come together outside of the building to tent. You know, like two students tent to get basketball tickets. In this case, they're tenting as part of the protest. But yes, the community has risen up in support, and I think you've seen over the past week Reverend William Barber came to sort of show his support for the protesters, and I think certainly people who are sympathetic with the causes of workers' rights are there and are showing their support for the Duke protesters.
We talked about the differences on college campuses, let's say from, again, that UC Davis incident in 2011 to today. Is this a sign that students are, and again, I think this waxes and wanes, do they have much leverage in protests these days, and are they growing in their power on college campuses?
Well, it's easy to talk about the power of social media, but it's a real thing. It's very easy for an incident to catch fire. If there was video taken of an altercation between administrators and students, that's something that we saw in the Missouri case. A video was taken of the system interacting with protesters in sort of an inflammatory way that had students rallying around it. So it's easy in that respect, but also students a recent survey of college freshmen said that freshmen today believe they're more likely than ever in the history of this survey to take part in a protest on campuses. So that's signaling sort of a growing awareness and willingness to organize for change.
What does this whole episode mean for Duke? I mean, this is a university that has had a history, sometimes a troubled racial history. In the recent past, they've gone to great lengths to restore faith in the community and repair some of the damage. Where does this fit in that story for Duke?
Well, it heightens awareness of the problem that Duke is certainly located in an area with a troubled racial history, the entire state, but also just on campus. I mean, it was just a year ago, roughly, that a noose was discovered to be hanging on the campus, and that really, really stirred up a lot of students' fears that, you know, we're at a private university that talks a lot about being equitable and being fair and being inclusive, but is that really true? So it serves to demonstrate that this problem of institutional racism is still an issue.
All right, Andy, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Andy Thomason is an editor with the Chronicle of Higher Education. Just ahead, we're going to take a look at the ethics of humor and, in particular, racial satire. Are there boundaries? Should there be? Can you go too far in making a joke? We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.